Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
I was a soldier, then a veteran, a husband, and a father. And with my VA home loan, I'm a homeowner. No down payment required and no PMI. Build your future with the VA home loan. Get what you earn. Visit choose.va.gov.
Not all veterans are eligible for this hyper amount of benefits mentioned here.
Hello, and welcome to Two Words Wolves Pod. I'm Ryan Eichen, and for the first time, we got two guests or two additional people on the pod, Leo Sun and Andrew Carlson. How are you guys doing?
I'm doing well. This is it's a first for everything, right? We went live on YouTube for the first time this past weekend. First time now on the actual podcast that's put out on a regular cadence. So this is a pretty big deal for me over here. I feel like Terrence Shannon being thrust into position maybe when I wasn't necessarily planned on. So I'm all right.
Leo, how you been?
I'm doing all right, man. I'm happy to be here with you and Andrew, and a little bit of FOMO seeing y'all out in Target Center amongst friends, at least. You know, when I was at the Lakers game one, it was a little bit different. I mean, I did get to see, you know, Jack Borman and Kyle Tighe and some of those guys. But again, my Canis family, I just feel happy to be able to be with y'all on this podcast to talk about some big Wolves wins. But I mean, personally for myself, I mean, look, man, I'm going to need y'all to send some help because I'm living in a divided home right now. My wife, as many of listeners may know, is a Laker fan. And she's been thoroughly, and with a capital A, annoyed with me all week. Like, shut up. Like, every time. Like, I'm like, Nas Reed. She's like, shut up. I'm putting up my Nas Reed window in our Nas Reed towel in our window. She's like, take that down. Like, why do you have that up? That's so stupid. And I was like, you know what, man? Like, hopefully you only have a couple more days of dealing with this, and then you can listen to me gloat about another team. But, you know, I'm smugly happy this week.
Yeah, you talk about the Canis family, and I said this to Andrew at the game. I counted, I think, six current and former Canis people at games 3 and 4. So obviously Andrew and I, you mentioned Jack and Kyle, and then also Tyler Metcalf from No Ceilings, and then I counted Dane as well, who's certainly had his share of bylines on the site too. I think that was the six, Andrew. I don't know if there was someone else I'm missing, but it was like a little Canis family reunion, kind of similar to what you said, Leo.
So, no, yeah, I don't think I counted anybody additional that was like the zone coverage guys. They had never had any bylines with Canis. I think you're right on with six, Ryan. Even like, because I know that there were some people that were at Canis that had worked for the Wolves organization and weren't there necessarily credentialed anymore. But so it I guess you could even count like fractions too if you wanted to. But I would say six that were there. But it was cool, man. It was cool to look around and just see a bunch of people who had been at the site. I mean, there's a reason that we've been around for as long as we have and have been doing it for as long as we have. I mean, there's a lot of absolute giants that are there.
Yeah, we've all been through some dark times, but I will say y'all are missing about 20,000 other people that are probably part of the Canis Hoopus community, probably all of Target Center. I'm sure they all have active accounts, are flooding the comments section every day. So, you know, we're all Canis, right?
Very, very, very true. Well, it's been a whirlwind of a week. Last time Leo and I did a pod was I posted the morning, like in the airport. I posted it on my way to game two. We can skip kind of talking about game two. Fun trip for me. Not so the game itself was pretty brutal. But since then, the Wolves have rattled off two wins against the Lakers. We'll talk about it later. But two of the better wins in Wolves history. They don't have a ton of playoff wins. So two out of the craziest atmospheres that I've been a part of. Two of the craziest, most fun games in Target Center history, probably. We can just kind of, before we really dive in, start with your guys' overall thoughts of the series, of the last two home wins. Andrew, what did you think about the Target Center atmosphere we were at?
Yeah, I was going to say, I'll dive in first because I want Leo to take last crack at it, back cleanup here on this one. Overall, again, like you said, Ryan, on the atmosphere is like definitely the best ones that I've seen. I do remember that like first year that they had made it after the Butler year with the Memphis series, like there were some really, really solid atmospheres there. Like the first time that they had kind of packed it out, it felt like in a really long time. And I think that was also the first season that they had those weird tarps up in the second level and they like removed them for the Memphis series. And it was like, okay, this is like kind of a thing now. And we're actually going to fill this place like it should. But definitely agree that those were like the loudest. And I thought Friday was going to be the loudest, but Sunday somehow usurped it as I think being the most active crowd that I've seen there in a long time. In terms of the actual series, that at least the last two games that happened, I think the thing that stood out to me the most is how this team has closed games. Something that has just been a complete issue all season long, specifically stemming from Anthony Edwards. I mean, he has been, let's face it, a problem in clutch time this year. Whether it be missing shots, bad shot selection, not necessarily being able to read defenses that are thrown at him late in games. It's been a little bit of an issue, and that's why it was so ironic when he was, and honestly got a little bit of backlash when he was top three in terms of the Clutch Player Award. That has not been the case so far, especially in these last couple of games. He's seemed to essentially flip a switch in terms of reading defenses late in games, in terms of getting other people involved, not necessarily making the ball sticky, though I was a little bit nervous in game four that was maybe going to be a bit more of a trend, and he ended up making the shots, and it looks great when it works. But his development late in games has been the biggest thing that stood out to me over the last two games, and especially on Friday, the word that kept coming to my mind in terms of that closeout was professional, because Sunday was very Anthony Edwards heavy. That was one where he was Superman, he threw the cape on and closed it out. Friday night felt like there were multiple people who were touching the ball late in the game, and it just felt like they knew exactly where they were going to be and what they were going to do, even though during the season that was definitely not the case. It was a complete flip of the switch.
Yeah, I mean, I only got to watch, obviously, through some, 2,000 miles away here in California, but many listeners, and Ryan likes to joke, my Sacramento Kings, I grew up in Sacramento, and, I felt like maybe it's a little bit of bias from just geographically for me, but I felt like Sacramento always had this reputation. They have these great home crowds. Like, they're super loud, super passionate, kind of grassroots kind of fan base, and I think that's been true from all the Kings games I've been to, but when I was listening to those two games on Friday and Sunday, it almost felt to me like I almost wanted to shed like a single manly tear down as I was listening. Like, dude, the crowd was crazy. Like, it was like, I thought, I was like, wait, do I have my volume turned up too high or whatever the case is? But it looked like it was rocking in there, man. Like, I was, doing my best not to piss off my wife, I swear, because, I felt like every time there was a big play, it was, I was about to lose it. But yeah, I mean, I legitimately had a headache after Sunday's game, because I think the high I was coming down, just like the highs, that game was just so up and down. But yeah, the atmosphere, again, I wish I could have been there. Andrew, you talk about the clutch time situations, and like, all season we know about how bad, clutch time numbers have been for the Timberwolves. But it's almost a microcosm of the Timberwolves as a franchise. Like, we've gone through so many years, like, oh yeah, like, we know what this team's going to do. They're going to let us down. Like, we know that they're gonna get some talent, they're gonna waste away, and we're gonna like continue to lose. And all season we saw, okay, we're gonna get it close, and then we're gonna lose at the end. And so you go into these last two games, like, okay, we're gonna get close, and we're gonna fall apart, like we've seen all 82 games of the season. But again, they turn it around, and it really does come down to Anthony Edwards, which I'll dive into a little bit more in our next segment. But I mean, he's providing like that clear beam of hope for like Wolves fans, for a lot of us who've been around for multiple decades now following the team, that when was the last time he's the first person since Kevin Garnett that we've seen someone that could legitimately inspire, like, things might be different for the next 10 years, for this fan base and for this team. So yeah, I mean, it was just incredible to watch, and yeah, I'm just super happy that y'all got to be there for sure.
And you kind of look at it too, Leo, and it's like the microcosm of the organization. It's like, you feel right now that things are on a ground that we haven't really been on before. Not like just when you look everywhere within the organization, like, they're not going to fire Chris Finch this year. It's not going to happen. It's not going to be the Phoenix Suns where you have four coaches in 4 years, like even the early 2010s Timberwolves have. You have stability at the president of basketball operations position report this week that Tim Connolly is going to be probably re-upping that and not having, maybe eliminating his option here over the next few years. You have the stuff with Glenn Taylor that's kind of out of the way now and kind of in the background. And it's like, now that this team has had, you know, it's been four straight years now in the playoffs. There's infrastructure there that's like a proven bit of success, and you have a star player who hasn't been a guy that's been, you know, caused a lot of issues, frankly, like hasn't had a lot of rifts with teammates, hasn't had a lot of things that have gone on in the locker room that have pushed people out. It's like, so when you talk about it's like the microcosm of the organization, I completely agree with you. And it's like that now it felt like, though, yes, they need to win one more here and close the series out. It's like, really kind of what you can do is kind of celebrate in that moment and say, you know, this is a team now that's on pretty solid ground compared to where they have been previously.
Yeah, to steal the tweet from Kyle Tighe, we've come a long way. I was kind of reminiscing after the game about the Houston series, the first time they broke the playoff streak, and just how, yeah, they broke the playoff streak, but they really in no way had any chance of winning that series. And then obviously the team blows up with Jimmy Butler, and they fall into the doldrums in really the prime of Cat's career, until they get Ant. And they're one game away from winning a playoff series for the second straight year. The Wolves have only been in the second round of the playoff two other times. Like, this is the best stretch of Timberwolves basketball in their history. Even if the disaster scenario of the series plays out, like, they're just like you guys said, they're in as good a spot as any. And yeah, we're hoping for it to continue as long as possible this year. Let's move on to our first segment, Apex Alpha. Who are our leaders of the pack this week? Leo, who is your leader of the pack?
Oh, make no doubt about it. It's employee number 5, Anthony Edwards, for sure, is my Apex Alpha. I mean, is there anyone else that could do what he does? I mean, is there not another mountain that this 23-year-old cannot climb? Is there not a moment that is too big for Ant? Because those 43 points that he dropped, I'm talking specifically on Sunday, that almost all came within the flow of the game. There was maybe one or two hero shots, and I think Finch mentioned it in the presser too, that, okay, well, he could have lived without. But for the most part, I mean, he made quick, smart drop-off passes to teammates in the third quarter when he was kind of getting going. He started opening the fourth quarter, back-to-back threes, to be like, yo, like, we're here. We're not going to fight a double-digit lead all quarter. He, you know, let some time pass by on the court to try and get his teammates back in rhythm until he realized, look, I got to get some more buckets because, you know, it's just not happening. He gets 5 more in a row. I think, you know, everyone, this is the main thing from the game. He set the tone on defense with LeBron. I mean, that physicality, like, he mentioned after the game, I'm going to be a pest. I'm letting him know we're here. We're not going nowhere. And he's a guy that backs it up. I mean, this isn't some fake tough guy shit. Like, this is real stuff that he brings. And I think it's just so interesting. KG and Paul Pierce have, like, their own podcast. I think it's KG Certified or whatever. And they were predicting the series going into the Lakers-Wolves, you know, series right now. And you know, KG's like, I kind of like the Wolves, and Paul Pierce's like, nah, I got the Lakers. Is, you know, yeah, and, you know, he'll talk shit to, you know, KD and Jokic and them, but he's not gonna do that to LeBron. He's not gonna do that to Luka. Like, he's not gonna stand up to us. Like, nah, like, this for sure set the tone. Like, he is, and he will continue to do that moving forward. And so, especially late, that the one thing I really want to highlight. People talk about, you know, oh, the eagle eye camera. That's, oh, they Minnesota had to hang a camera from the top of the ceiling to win that challenge. And, you know, Ant was slipping or whatever. But Ant made the smart decision to drive late in clutch time instead of just standing around. I think it's kind of a weird play where I think Dante caught it. And he was driving, or someone caught it and dropped it off for Ant, who was also kind of driving right next to him. And Ant goes up and he gets called for, he gets, you know, fouled essentially. It hits what you can call the game-sealing free throws there at the end. And so, again, Anthony Edwards, he just did everything you can ask for. Been super, super impressive. And, again, he just continues. Every time you think he's hit his peak, like, he's just showing that he has just so many more levels left to him. So, again, I'm just, like, in awe watching this guy for sure.
I got two things off of that. One, Kendrick Perkins said the first thing the other day that I think I might have actually paid attention to, and that is if I was a player and I had to go back right now, Anthony Edwards would be the one guy I want to play with. And he said, if you pulled a lot of other former players, that's probably who I would want to be too. Now, Kendrick Perkins is someone who I do not listen to on a regular basis on really anything that he says. However, he does still have the brain of a former NBA player and kind of who I would classify as your kind of typical old head. And that is something that is, like, for sure kind of sticking out to me. I mean, if you have guys who are wanting to come to play with Anthony Edwards at this point in time, wanting to go play for the Minnesota Timberwolves as someone who's an above average NBA player, completely unheard of. Kind of putting a bow on what we were previously talking about. The second thing, the Hawkeye camera, the Canis account, I put some on the Canis account a little bit ago talking about how fitting it was the last 2 minutes report, that it was Jaden who kind of got by with one after last year's game two Western Conference Finals game. I think it was, I'll give credit, it was Stanthony Edwards. He actually replied and said, "The Hawkeye camera was used in the Dallas series last year when they overturned the cat put back. I think that was also game two. That was, I would say, almost an even more questionable call than what generated the proximate foul rule." And I remember at that time, I was one of the people who was like, "Is this camera even a thing? Have they used it before? I don't think this has been used in regular game action." And sure enough, here we are 1 year later, Luka Karma, we're back at it, and it's being used against the Lakers. So how fitting that was, right?
For those of you who want to know, kind of a little behind the scenes action, Andrew Carlson runs, like, he's the vibes leader for the Kenneth Hoopis Twitter account. Most of the stuff that comes out there, that's Andrew. If you're following us on Blue Sky, that's mostly me over there. So I love kind of watching after the game. After I'm like live tweeting from the Kenneth Hoopis Blue Sky account, switch over to Twitter. Like, how like even was our energy throughout
the hellscape?
Yeah,
the hellscape over on X.
Exactly. Yeah.
Oh man. It's funny how you get some of the outsourcing of knowledge when people are at their peak of wanting to roast the Laker fan base, right? it's truly like some of the brain power, the collective brain power that's been put to use here over the last 3 days. I've learned more than maybe I have in my first 26 years of life. I'm going to go with Jaden McDaniels this week as mine, just because this is the first time I think. Early on in his career, obviously you saw the flashes and you're like, okay, this can really be something with Ant here. I think Sunday was the first time where I'm like, okay, this guy's floor at this point in his career is the third option on this team within 2 years, on a legitimate title contending team. You had the 30 points on Friday, and then he comes back on Sunday and has a game that you essentially didn't really pick him out from. Like, it wasn't something where this was the Jaden McDaniels game that we really absolutely 100% needed following up a 30 point game on Friday, and he still ended up with 16-11, out rebounded Rudy Gobert, was crucial against the Lakers small lineups, and really going off of that mentality that he had, one, not only calling out the Lakers lack of rim protection out on the floor, but then completely backing it up and going and grabbing 11 boards, completely parlaying and piggybacking on his performances that he had like earlier on in the winter, where it was essentially snapping in from 2-3 rebound games and grabbing 6-7 rebounds a night. So that was something that was enlightening for me, is like, this is sustainable. I think it's going to be 1 to 2 years before like he shows up on scouting reports and kind of learns how to deal with more attention from other teams. But this was the first time where I'm like, yeah, it's, this guy's a legitimate second, third option on a championship team if he can just develop a little bit more. And how does that not make you excited? I mean, frankly, it's the exact thing that you thought he would pan out when he signed that 5-year extension and kind of did the thing where he locked up Luka and Kyrie in the 2022-23 season alongside Ant. Like, that's the potential you saw, and it's rounding into form right now.
Yeah, we've already talked about the ascension of Edwards in this playoffs, and the other guy that's done that is Jaden McDaniels. It was not that long ago where we were wondering, oof, is this a rough contract? His offensive game isn't blossoming like it should. The rebounding was always an issue. And the past few months, and really especially in these playoffs, he's just been phenomenal, to the point that in game four, the Lakers took Luka off of Jaden, because he just torched him in game three, and they put him on Randle for the first half, and then Randle torches Luka in the first half of game four. Like, Jaden's ascension offensive game was always going to be needed for this team to take whatever next leap, especially once they give him that contract extension that, for when people didn't like it at the time, I was just like, that's just what guys get paid now. Like, that's just a standard extension for a solid starting caliber player in the NBA for a playoff team at this point. And he, obviously the game three is what stands out, a career high 30 points. Incredible. And then he does have the game winner what ends up being the final go ahead bucket in game four, which I just thought, like, that's like the play of this season to this point, maybe the play of Anthony Edwards' career, maybe one of them, where, like we talked about, Ant struggled with the double teams all year. There was just points in like December where he was just like gone. I remember like doing pods with Leo and just having to like hold myself back just from ripping into Ant, because I just thought from like in December and November, I thought he was just awful, really bad. And he picked it up, I don't remember exactly when, mid-January, and has been fantastic since. But play of the game, they bring two to the ball. Ant kicks it to Nas, who hits Jaden in the dunker spot for an and one dunk. They take the lead, and then we talked about the Phantom Cam free throw and then I guess we didn't mention this, the Austin Reeves three. I was ready to throw up.
Oh my god!
Yeah, it looked now, good initially.
I will say, the Lakers played their entire, I'm just going to call it their starting five, their five-man lineup the entire second half. That's not exactly the team that promotes confidence in winning in overtime, because you'd imagine they played the last 24 minutes. You'd imagine JJ was going to roll with them the next five. But yeah, Jaden was spectacular. And I'll just sneak my Apex Alpha in here
Let me throw this in there right before you go. I apologize. Like, Jaden, like, okay, sorry, that last closeout that Ant had, or closeout, I put in air quotes, on Austin Reeves, where basically Ant just kind of, like, put up a hand, kind of strolled towards him. Mm-hmm. I put on the Canis Blue Sky account about, like, that was a closeout that would make Russell Westbrook, like, disappointed, like, turn in his grave, because, like, that was the most lackadaisical final. Like, all right, I don't want to foul him in that same corner that Nog got fouled in, that instead I'm just going to let him shoot a three, and oh my god, yeah. Dude, it was just an insane, like, 1 second in the air. But yeah, about Jaden, though, I think it's all between the ears for him, though. I think what impressed me most was that last free throw he made, because how many times have we seen Jaden just, like, short arm a free throw or whatever, and, like, that confidence that he has in himself is just so huge. I do want to throw that one little nugget, like, shout out to him. That was literally the free throw that got the lead at the end. So, but yeah, go ahead, Ryan.
Yeah, I just wanted to – the reason I was trying to get in there so quick was because – my Apex Alpha is Naz Reid, and I just think, like, our three players that we highlighted here are the core three players moving forward for the Timberwolves. It's not to say Rudy Gobert won't play a big role, even in game five or the next series if they win that one or whatever. And it's not to say Dante hasn't been an important part, Mike and Nikhil, obviously. But to me, the core three that they should be working hard, and Randall, obviously, has been incredible, I think, in this series. But Jaden, Naz, and Ant are, like, the three guys I would be very highly incentivized to retain. And those have been the three guys that have carried them down the stretch of the fourth quarters. Naz was awful, I thought, in the first three quarters. Finch said in his presser, he said to Naz, like, you're welcome to show up anytime the first three quarters. But he comes in the court late after getting torched by Luka basically the entire game. Puts in a bucket over Austin Reeves, gets a stop on Luka, although Luka kind of missed a layup. And then hits the trailer three, hits another three late. Just an outstanding. He saves their ass in that game. They lose that game if Naz doesn't come in and start hitting shots. Three of his four field goals in that game are right down the stretch in the fourth quarter. Just, yeah, the trio of Naz, Ant, and Jaden have just been incredible down the stretch of games.
He hit big shots. It's exactly what Naz hasn't really done for, like, a lot of his career. He's had some for sure, but to hit, like, two huge shots down the stretch, that is not something that we have ever seen from him, given the stakes. I just want to throw that in there, and I'll let you roll, Leo.
Yeah, no, I mean, seriously, I mean, I don't know if there's a player that Laker fan bases are more annoyed with right now than Naz Reid, because, yeah, like you said, he has not missed a quarter missed a shot in the fourth quarter of all these games so far. And that confidence that he has, I put this also out on Blue Sky again. I'm trying to beat Andrew for followers here. Follow us, Candace Hubis at Blue Sky. Now, is that, like, Naz Reid is a player that when he is out, when he loses his shit, it is so hard to get him back because, as you know, Finch has said, he's an emotional player, like many of the other players are on our team. And so you see him mentally, like he starts missing some shots, he gets frustrated, some silly fouls, there's arguing with the refs, and then he just like loses, he can't find his touch. And for him to bounce back after, like you said, right, such a terrible start to the game, and to come in locked in and focused, I mean, that's what he said. I think it was in one of the social medias the Timberwolves put out, was like the guys like leaving, heading to the locker room from the tunnel. And I remember he shouts out something like, "That's why you stay locked in," kind of thing. And like that mentality, that's literally the reason why Naz Reid has become the player that he is, a reigning sixth man of the year, or technically last year sixth man of the year, because I think they already announced Peyton Pritchard got it this year. But yeah, like he worked his way up, like having to rebuild his confidence. And that's, you know, again, huge, like huge, huge, huge.
And Naz has that equity too. I mean, I think he still got what, fifth this year, and Nikhil got sixth. Yeah. Like I think they went kind of back to back. I will say too, but on the contest late in the game, one thing that I kept thinking about for the last couple of days, and especially today, with all of the bitching I saw about the last 2 minutes report today, if you're just going through the thought exercise, if the tables were completely flipped and you're the Wolves. If I had the opportunity and we had the opportunity to see a look that clean to go to overtime at any point in the season, in any game, I would cut one of my fingers off. You have, in any situation that the Wolves have had this year, to tie, take the lead, hit a go-ahead basket, inside of 10 seconds, it hasn't worked at any point in time, and it's one of the clunkiest operations that there is. If you, sure, you have a last 2 minute call that didn't go your way, completely understandable, it would piss me off, I completely get it, but you also had a clean look. And for all the stuff that we've heard about Austin Reeves this year, fringe all-star, possible third team all-NBA, like you have a clean corner look to go to overtime, and he misses it. So yeah, it was a bad contest. There wasn't really any sort of a hand in his face whatsoever. But I mean, man, for as much as we're hearing about that, if you're a Wolves fan and you see that execution late in the game, you'd take that 10 times out of 10 from this team within 10 seconds. No question about it.
Yeah, and Reeves was 5 of 10 from 3. He in the two Target Center games, Reeves has been pretty darn good for them. Although, just like Luka, they are hunting him. Both of those guys are hunting him defensively. Excuse me, I was looking at game 3. Sorry. Reeves was 5 of 11 before that shot, so pretty much the same thing. Yeah, it was insane whistles down the stretch. What did the 2 minute report refer to when Jaden tripped Luka? Illegal foot defense? I get what it's trying to say. They make up the weird, like anytime there's a review, I feel like they make up a new verbiage that I've never heard before. Yeah, I Wolves probably caught a break with that call that by the book. That is to me, the tripping one is like, yes, by the book, that's a foul. If the Lakers had a challenge and challenged it, they would have gotten that call. That is like, that just doesn't always get called in the heat of the game. And the ref isn't in the greatest spot to call that in the backcourt. Like, I get being frustrated by it, but I mean, let's just go, if we're going to do this, let's go right into the prey of the week. Mine is... My prey of the week for the Wolves is fascism. Always good to try to root out some fascism. And so the reason I had a bit of a hit tweet, I was fairly snarky about it because after the... So I tweeted this out after Ant got rolled up on by LeBron. Not necessarily LeBron's fault. But LeBron spent the whole TV timeout just complaining to the ref, and I was just like, I can't do this. Luka's been getting all the calls. Like, I can't do this. So I tweeted out a screenshot, what I think every time I see the Lakers, and it's this tweet from Richard Normal. A key element of fascism is making it appear that the entire world is organized against your group, when in fact you are in the most advantageous and powerful position in society. So we can, in real life, we can think of past and present past and present examples of this. He goes on to say in this tweet, the Los Angeles Lakers are a textbook example of this phenomenon. So the Wolves were able to overcome fascism in game 4. Phenomenal stuff. And I do not want to discuss the officials if the Laker fans are going to complain about it. You guys, I do that enough so I know how much of a loser shit that is. So enjoy your, if you're going to complain about the refs, enjoy your loser shit.
Send tweet, baby.
It's bad both ways. Like, I don't understand that. Like, the last 2 minutes report is the last 2 minutes report. There's a video out there of Julius Randle, that bucket that he scored right before he put two hands to the chest, like three times down the floor. He was fouled three times on that play, and there were zero whistles that were blown. I'm with you. Like, it, talking about the officials and saying that it was completely against your team is like, that's not, I don't think that's really a playoff conversation. Like, I feel like there's definitely some regular season games where that may or may not be the case. But I mean, for something like that, like, I thought, especially the last two games, like, it's been bad on both sides. Like, let's just call a spade a spade. And my prayer of the week kind of leans into that is like, you know why the Lakers lost that basketball game is because they don't have any personnel. I think I saw something that Naz Reid is outscoring their entire bench this series. I don't know if that's true. Like, we might need to fact check that live, but it wouldn't, like, the fact that I believe it without fact checking it at all is all you need to really see. Like, last game, I don't think they had a single bench player play over 15 minutes. My prayer of the week is JJ Redick, because I think he's actually a good coach and he's had a nice year one. And he has like two stars now that are going to, I think, probably bump him up to be perceived as one of the best coaches in the league in the next few years to come. But he doesn't have anything right now. And there's a reason that he played the same five guys in the second half yesterday. It's a prey where it's like, it might be like a lynx that's injured. Maybe that's not a good animal, because we actually do like the lynx on this podcast. This is the lynx podcast. Maybe a mountain lion. It's a little bit of a synonym. Like, they're injured. They have a broken leg, and the, you know, they're maybe on their last, they're on their last go of it in life. That's my prey for JJ Redick. I don't necessarily think he's a bad coach. I think he's actually had a pretty good series too. But he doesn't have the personnel. He's a wounded duck right now. And they're going to have to play. LeBron was 76 seconds away from playing a full game. I like Luka, who's clearly not in full 100% playing shape. It played 45 minutes. I mean, that's all you need to know. That's where I'll leave it, because I think that's probably been beat up enough. My prayer of the week is JJ Redick, and I think it's going to have to be much of the same in game five. Where you have your two stars play over 45 minutes, if you have any prayer, bring it back to Minnesota.
You know, the two of you are a lot more kind to the Lakers than I am. I'll say that, because those of you, I will continue to plug this at my open letter to the Los Angeles Lakers, where I hate the Lakers and I have no shame about it. And like, starting with you, Ryan, talking about fascism, I wrote in that piece, I have been saying this for, I don't know, at least 15 years. The Lakers are the 1%, like, of the NBA. Like, they don't deserve half the shit they get. And so if they're going to complain about the refs, you're asking me to somehow find sympathy for a team that has been the only team ever documented to have a referee cheat them into a playoff victory before. You're not going to get one single tear from me ever about officiating ever. Okay, so that's first and foremost. Second, JJ Redick is a prey. Sure, fine coach, whatever, lacking personnel. Oh, yeah. Well, too bad, because you just got gifted Luka Doncic, all right? And so what, you need to trade Shake Milton for Giannis to fill out your team next year? Like, what the hell? Like, you know, so you have a bad team? Yeah, well, too bad. You have two freaking generational superstars on your team. I'm hard-pressed to feel bad for you. So, again, I got to move on, because I'm losing.
Yeah, on the record, I don't think that's going to be the case moving forward for him, Leo. You're dead on. I do not feel bad for him moving forward. I think they're going to be setting up just fine. But, hey, Alex Len, former lottery pick, you know, he might have some promise. Luka unlocks him a little bit, you know. Might be pretty good off the bench behind Jackson Hayes.
All right, I'm about to make Andrew my prey of the week. Now, my prey of the week for this week is got to be LeBron James. And again, I will say I am a LeBron James fan. I tend to like him as a human being. I like him as an athlete. You know, I think he may be the greatest basketball player of all time when he retires, whenever that is. Maybe after this series, who knows? But LeBron James, again, all season, I've been highlighting my prey of the week, and Ryan knows this, and listeners know. I've been highlighting whoever's been getting dunked on and posterized. But on Sunday, we saw LeBron get posterized by Mike Connolly on a block, where Mike Connolly came, you know, he was living on LeBron's hip on a fast break. He was held in jail, as we like to call it. And LeBron went up for what should have been an easy layup or dunk. And Mike Conley literally sacrificed his ankle to jump as high as he could. I believe his hand was under the rim sill, but he just kind of pats LeBron down from behind. And yeah, he landed on Rudy's foot and kind of twists his ankle, but came back in the game later. But yeah, I mean, it's kind of for the memes, like, okay, sure, yeah, the oldest and shortest guy on our team blocked like your biggest and strongest dude on your team. But at the same time, I mean, Minnesota was down 11 in the third quarter during that. They had just missed back-to-back threes where Ant missed a three, they got offensive rebound, and then Mike missed a three. And it was one of those like, oh my God, like, I think this game's getting away from us. And then after that situation, Mike blocks LeBron James, and then they come back, they ignite a 9-0 run to bring them back in the game. Now, subsequently, they went and gave up another double-digit lead right after that. But, I mean, if that didn't happen, that they may have been looking at a 20-point lead, a 20-point deficit heading into the fourth quarter, right, instead of, like, you know, a more manageable situation. So, yeah, I mean, it really did, I think, save the Wolves in that really important sequence. And, I mean, it was a hell of a highlight. The Wolves social media team put out a video out there, a reel, about, like, asking the players, the Timberwolves, like, how would you rate Mike's dunk? And there's a lot of really funny answers. You want to go through and watch that. I forget if it was Julius Randle or something. He's like, I would give him a 10, but you got to at least take 5 points off because he hurt himself. He landed on that. So some pretty funny responses there. So shout out Mike Conley. And yeah, LeBron, you're my prey of the week this week.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I mean, if you went with you could have gone Luka because Ant did get him. Although I think Ant did say after that, the game after the Luka dunk, that he didn't like that dunk. He wished he would have done more. So I think that was good to keep it away from the Prey of the Week. And then I will say last thing on Prey of the Week. Leo, you usually put out the graphic based on all the responses.
Yep.
Please do not put any fascist ideology into the image. Just like do the Laker logo.
The
please
giant
do not.
Swastika under Ryan.
Yeah, please. Like... Yeah, do not do that. That's bad and looks poorly on me because it'll be my name next to it. So please don't. Nice. Thank
got
you.
It. Got it. Noted.
Just put in the description, about 25 minutes in, Ryan talks fascism.
That's going to be the lead for our episode, like fascism, Ryan. Yeah.
Oh, God. Let's move on and move anywhere else but there. All right, we'll move on to our first howl or foul. The Wolves came back from 10 down in the fourth quarter. It was their second largest playoff comeback. Behind the Denver game 7 last year, which is just insane. That's more of a stat on like how few, like 10 is really not that big of a lead in NBA terms. Like that just shows off you like playoff victories they have to begin with. Game 4 was about as fun of a playoff game atmosphere as I've been to. So kind of, what do you guys think? Howl or foul? That is a top 3 game in franchise history. Andrew, you can go first.
Yeah, I'll go foul on this one because I think my barometer is typically like if I can think of three off, just off the top of my head that are better, because I'd go game 82, the Jimmy Butler year. Like that game was still just like unbelievable to go to the playoffs. You have Wiggins hit those game clinching free throws. A game 7 last year against Denver. Obviously, that one's up there. And as fun as Sunday was, like you can kind of. Dealer's choice on the Phoenix games last year too, that I would take over. Like those are just fun. I mean, they kicked their ass up and down the floor, and especially the 1-2, I think it was game 4 where the closeout game where yes, Chris Finch got hurt. But I think that was the Ant poster game that just kind of put a seal on everything. And then you see everyone back in the locker room, like taking care of Finch. Like that was a fun moment too. So I'm going to go foul on this one. Fun game. Not top 3 in franchise history. I don't even know if it'd be top 3 of the last 10 years, frankly. And even obviously to like game 7 of the Western Conference semis against Sacramento with KG. I mean, that one's just like you keep watching YouTube highlights for years and years. So not quite there for me.
Yeah, I will say my initial rational thought is similar to Andrew, where I would say foul because, yeah, I wrote down in my notes here that number one is probably game 7 against Denver, obviously the huge comeback and the ramifications of that game. Game 2 also being the one against, or number 2 would be game 7 against Sacramento, obviously, again, first time they make the conference finals. I think if you had to pick one image of all Wolves lore to be, like, enshrined forever, it's KG on the scorer's table, right? Game 7, like, that's got to be the one. And then, yeah, I also had game 82 versus Denver back then as well, too. But that said, I'm still going howl that that is a top three game in franchise history, because every time we beat the Lakers, it is a number one top one game for me ever. Okay. Like, you can go back in my memories on Facebook where you go, on this day, you will see just a smattering of like me shit talking like all my Laker friends on Facebook and tagging everyone every time the Wolves beat freaking Smush Parker and the Los Angeles Lakers. Like every win they have, I'm talking mad trash. And so I think if the Wolves do close them out, game five, game six, whatever it is, that will probably be my new number one, because to me, this Lakers Wolves game or series, this is my championship. Like, this is for me, this is for all the marbles for me, like emotional. I will probably cry when they beat them. So that said, I'm saying howl because, again, just huge, huge. But I will say, yeah, probably another game. I wasn't at it, but I think game six against Denver last year, I mean, I feel like the vibes were pretty insane in Target Center when they crushed them and they got the chicken and Luka Garza time, you know, all that. That seems like pretty good vibes as well, too. So, but yeah, so at the end of the day, I'm saying howl, right?
Yeah, I think it's really close between a lot of the two game sevens are just very clearly one and two. And personally, I put the Denver game as the number one. I think it's, I actually just don't kind of think it's close. I think that Denver, maybe that's,
I would agree,
recency bias. So then it comes down, there's a bunch of games that fall into this. Maybe the closeout game of the first round in 2004, I guess. I was nine, so I don't have the best memory of that game specifically. I remember the Sacramento game for sure. And then, like you mentioned, game 82, I'm just going to go a playoff game over a regular season game, even if it is, but mostly because like they just had no chance to beat Houston in the next round, even if it did break the playoff streak. And then we kind of mentioned the basically like the Phoenix games and the game six Denver. So the game before the greatest Wolves game, I'm going to kind of put that game in the backseat just because I still remember the feeling of, like, they're still going to lose game seven. Because if you remember the game five of that series, Jokic had just absolutely torched them. And maybe I'm got revisionist history because I traveled out the game seven. And so if I felt that way, that it was just inevitable that they were going to lose, I spent a lot of money to go watch them lose. But yeah, I think it's, for me, it's a howl. And it is contingent on them closing out the series, obviously. But it's close. You can take your picks on the Phoenix game. I do. The anecdote I tell about the game four Phoenix game, you've mentioned Finch getting hurt, is so I was at that game too. I recapped the article. I shut my laptop. I'm rushing to the airport because I flew home a red eye that night because my son's birthday was the next day. And I just take one last look down the hallway where the Wolves locker room is. And I see Finch like just hobbling and getting on a cart. And I'm like, well, I'm just going to kind of stand here and
hop a ride with him.
See what the heck is going on here.
He's probably going to the bar.
Well, I believe the story is that he was on a good amount of painkillers at that point. And so I was standing there with, I believe, two of Chris Hine, Dane Moore, and Kyle Soggy. I honestly don't remember which two, or maybe Jace. I don't remember. And so, and then the car comes riding by us, and he just goes, "What's up, fellas?" As they ride off, it's like the Wolves just swept the Phoenix Suns, and Finch is injured.
High as a kite, just high. Yeah, as a kite. Like.
That was an insane night.
He's the type of guy though, where it's like, is it really that much different if he's off like four or five perks or if he's just completely stone cold sober? Like, I feel like he's just the guy where it's just like, he's always the guy who's just like maybe a little high, you know, like he's got that kind of personality. He's awesome. But
he's the Andrew Wiggins of coaches. You know, he's going to never know where it's really going on.
He's just steady the whole time.
I think Finch is more of a beer guy than a weed guy. That's the vibe I get.
No, for sure. But it's like your friend who it's always just like, oh yeah, man, like anything goes. Like we're good. Like it's all right. Yeah. Like we just blew a 24-point lead to Milwaukee. But we just couldn't handle a zone in the fourth quarter. You know, like it was really all it came down to. It's like, really?
I will say after game two of this series was about the the snippiest I've seen him with the media. I don't cover every single game, but like, yeah, he did not like the assertion that that like effort was the issue in that game. He was just pissed off at this team, I think, that night.
Interesting. Here's another couple that I would raise that are up against Sunday. For me personally, even though it was a game that I watched on TV this year, is the 24-point comeback against Oklahoma City. That one, I think for me I think that one's going to be a top tenner for me for sure in franchise history, just because of the circumstance. Like, you had the young guys that essentially came charging back from a 25-point deficit on the road against one of the best regular season NBA teams ever. Yeah. What it's going to go down as. So that one I think is probably going to be up there for me too. I also think too, we're underestimating a little bit, like how good the vibes were that 21-22 season when they went back, that play-in game against the Clippers. Like that
Clippers play-in game is
that one was like, okay, they're back. Tarps were still on the 200s, by the way, for that game, I believe. But, but that was a lot of fun.
That year was back when, so like what is now the Jaden McDaniels player tunnel, that's where the media seating used to be. Is that the last season it was there, I believe? And so, like, when Pat Bag gives on the table, that's, like, right in front of us.
It's amazing. It's amazing.
Yeah, I think that's a good assertion, because that one felt like it had a lot of the similar feelings to the Denver playoff series or the Denver game 82, but they had a chance and probably should have beat Memphis. Like, they had a chance to actually, like, win. And I actually, like we said, game three, Memphis, like, I think that's why a big reason why we don't remember that series, because the game three was so brutal.
Yeah.
Like they win game four, but like I always say they did not blow 20 point leads. The first 20 point lead never got tied. They were always up. I know, like, but yeah, that was the game three kind of ruined the vibes for that. I remember walking out that night and being like, they were down 2-1, and I was just like, it's over.
It was awful. It was awful. But it felt going into it that was going to be a series that was winnable. And then it also felt, too, that it was like this is sustainable winning now. Like, the Jimmy Butler year, like, that was kind of a little IV shot to the arm. Like, let's just see how this can work for however short period of time with, like, Jeff Teague and Taj Gibson and a bunch of other guys who are a little bit older. It's like, okay, now this team is younger. They have a little bit of a mix of vets and guys who can score the basketball. Like, this feels good. This feels pretty good now. Like that felt like the playoff streak being broken, not as much as 17-18.
Yeah, it was much more of a organic team, right? That kind of came together, found identity. It wasn't like
sustainable
marred by
too.
Like, yeah, exactly. And then we ought to blow it up for the worst trade of all time, right?
So. I love it.
Yeah, that trade ages incredibly well. By the way, that's like an off-season podcast discussion, but yeah, let's move on to our second howl or foul. Like we kind of mentioned, Redick plays the same five guys down the stretch of the game. I still am so confused why they're starting Hayes. Like, you can space it if you like, just play the guys you're playing, and if you want to play Hayes 4 minutes, play 4 minutes of those in the second half when you can actually get some guys some extra. I don't know. I don't understand why they're starting Hayes, although the Wolves aren't starting their best lineup either, so whatever. Yeah, starts in the entire second half. The howl or foul here is the Lakers are out of answers. Leo, what do you think?
I'm going howl, because unless Bronny is wearing a sting mask and dropping down the rope from the rafters with a baseball bat on his shoulder, like, I don't know. I mean, are they dusting off Christian Coloco? You know, Rui Hachimura I had to go back and look. It was the second best career game in the playoffs, but still wasn't enough. Vando and Hayes are unplayable, like you said. I mean, I don't know what there is. I mean, look up and down that roster. There's literally no one else that they should be playing more minutes. And even the minutes that they're playing right now, it's like, I felt like, you know, I'm not the first to say this. It felt like JJ Redick's final like option right there. They knew that if they didn't win game four, that it might be over. And so he had to pull the trigger on playing them all 24 in that second half. And again, I put it out again on Blue Sky. I'm going to play Blue Sky. Scoop is Blue Sky. That early on, I think in the fourth quarter, I'm like, JJ Redick has not made a sub all half. Let's see if this pays off for the Timberwolves afterwards. And again, you know, lo and behold, it does. And so again, I don't think it's reasonable that they're going to do that same strategy again. It seems like all the other levers they pull is going to make the team worse. So again, it has to be with those five guys. And I don't know if it's an adjustment that they need to make. They need to lean more into rebounding, playing more in the half court, whatever it is, getting more guys moving. It feels like they fired all their shots. So I'm going to say Howell. I think they're out of answers.
Yeah, I'll howl there too. I think that there's a couple things that maybe they could tweak on the margins, but at the end of the day, it's very similar to what I think Ryan and I talked. You and I talked about this a little bit in the preview of the series of like the Lakers. It's going to be a game of whack-a-mole for them, and where they whack down Julius Randle, maybe Dante DiVincenzo pops up, and their strategy is they have to play physical. And if there's two moles that pop up one night, then they're going to be okay. And sure enough, in game two, it was Julius Randle and Anthony Edwards, and nobody else decided to show up to the party. So that's really what it is. That's the adjustment that has to be made, is that the Wolves are in their own heads. Only two players show up, two or less players show up in game five. And the Lakers play with their game two physicality, because that does knock them off kilter a little bit. Like, the Wolves don't do well with ball pressure. They don't do great with people getting up into their body and pressuring them even at full court. Gabe Vincent actually did a pretty good job against Nikhil Alexander-Walker with that. So if you can sustain that and you can have two or less guys show up, then sure, that's your adjustment. But that's just the same thing that happened in game two. I don't think there's anything new that's left in the bag.
Yeah, for lineup adjustments, I agree that there's not really anything they got left. But I'm going to go foul and that they're out of answers, because to me, there's one big one. And that's Luka can start giving a shit on defense. He's been beyond awful. He's been doing this his entire career for a guy that is an incredible winning player, obviously. Like, Luka Doncic drives winning. He's made two conference finals with largely, like, not all that talented rosters in Dallas. Although maybe they are talented because, like, Brunson's in New York kicking ass now. But he's just been awful defensively. And it's been a thing his entire career. If you guys remember for the finals, the Windhorse. Like, that is where the winners live, and that's where the winners, if you know what I'm talking about, go Google what I just said and you'll find it. But his point was like, just this kind of stuff with Luka is just in his way. It's the complaining about the officials. He's done that as much as anyone on the court. Obviously, the Wolves have done their fair share of that too, but and the defense has just been terrible. He just does this thing when he's like clearly beat, where he just like puts his hands down and shoves his hip into the player driving. They haven't called it a single time. It's driving me nuts. But he is just not trying hard enough. And he's not their only weak link defensively, because Reeves is, it's less of an effort thing with Reeves. It's probably more of a size and strength thing, but like, they just need him to, they don't just be not awful. And like, it, there's been four games and countless other playoffs series that he hasn't been able to do it. So maybe at that point, yeah, they are out of the options. But like, it's a roadblock for his career, I think. And maybe it won't matter. Maybe next year LeBron will keep playing like this for one more year. They'll add a rim running center and they'll win the finals or something. But yeah, that's to me the biggest low hanging fruit for this Lakers team, is like, if Luka can just play passable defense instead of any player the Wolves put on him, they drive right past, then maybe they can find something. I don't know.
All right. Thank you, listeners. That'll be it for our Nico Harrison guest speaker here.
I was going to say, you sound a lot like Nico Harrison.
No, I'm kidding.
That's the thing that the trade, though, is that I wouldn't say it makes it smart, because the trade is just idiotic, but like, something if Nico's point, and I don't think he really rationally thought this through, but like, something needs to change with Luka. They weren't particularly close to winning the finals. Boston kicked their ass. If, to be honest, the Wolves were just a perfect matchup for them, and Dallas deserves credit for winning that series. But if Denver holds a 20-point lead, I think Denver's in the finals. I don't know. And this series has been as spectacular as Luka has been. This specific Laker team needs more from him defensively.
It's like the progressive campaign. You buy a home, you become your parents. It's like, you watch enough Luka Doncic in the playoffs, you become Nico Harrison. This guy can't play defense.
Yeah, don't put that curse on me, man.
I mean, I'm right there with you, though. I mean, there's a reason that there's kind of like some low-key Nico Harrison sympathy on the timeline today. Like, people are putting it out on Maine, like Nico Harrison, like, maybe he was right. It's like, no, shut up, he wasn't. But also, like, he kind of has a small point there. I mean, I think Zach Lowe talked about it too on his podcast. Like, there are people in the NBA who have your exact same thought process, Ryan. It's like the thought process of everybody. It's like, yeah, the guy can't play defense, but he's such a talented offensive player that the trade, that was enough to make the trade idiotic in itself. But
Nico's insane because Austin Reeves should be on the Dallas Mavericks right now. And the pick that they were trying to send to Mark Williams should also be in possession of the Dallas Mavericks. That's as big of a sin as you can concoct yourself the way I just did into thinking Luka isn't worth the super duper mega max, but like, to not get, I mean, the Lakers are like out of the playoffs if the, I mean, even if they would, like, the Luka trade makes sense for them, but like, to not get the right package back for Luka, and not to mention the fan base, is just insane.
Yeah, there's a lot of things at play. I mean, I think one thing, I mean, in all seriousness, I mean, Luka is still recovering from a pretty serious hamstring injury that he suffered on Christmas against the Wolves. And like, he, you know, came back earlier than what I think a lot of people thought. So that could play into it. But also, I think at the same time, it's kind of what Andrew said earlier, too. It's the poor construction of the team. Like, Luka isn't ever going to be an Anthony Edwards on defense. That's just never going to happen. He needs better defenders, like, as we saw in Dallas. He has, like, more defenders. He has, you know, your Derrick Jones, you know, Jr. on the perimeters. You know, you have your, you know, P.J. Washington, you know, Daniel Gaffers, Livelys. And he's not surrounded by that, and we're kind of seeing it go. So, obviously, yeah, there'll be, you know, the verdict is not out on that yet in terms of, obviously, a trade. But, I mean, it's still very much a good trade for the Lakers. But, yeah, I mean, fuck him. So.
Use Rudy Gobert. Yeah, could use Rudy Gobert in the paint.
You know, yeah. I'm saying LeBron for Rudy Gobert. I mean, Who says no? You know,
unironically, Rudy Gobert would be fantastic on this Laker team, right, with Luka.
Exactly. 100%.
Yeah. All right.
Last towel foul. Speaking of Rudy, he probably had his best game of the series in game four. He had 7 offensive rebounds, and I counted it up. He had 2 more where he gets fouled, and it goes down as a team rebound, but like, Rudy earned the offensive rebound. He drew the foul. Like, that, I would give him credit for that. So that's 9 extra possessions he earned on the offensive boards. His hands continue to be an issue. I don't know, but it's the first game that he truly like, had 10 total rebounds. It was the first game that he truly provided some offensive value with his rebounding. And then the defense has been solid the entire time, but the Wolves both games at Target Center have elected to go away from Mike and Rudy and go towards Dante and Nas. So howl or foul, guys, Wolves need to lean away from the Rudy minutes. Leo, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm going to go with howl in that I think they should lean away from Rudy minutes. Now, I don't think that's going to happen because Chris Finch has a little bit of that JJ Redick in him where it's like he's still going to go with, you know, that lineup that he likes. And, you know, he's played less than 30 minutes every game so far. But, I mean, I will say in my game notes when I was watching it on Sunday, the person I had the most notes on was on Rudy Gobert that I kind of like. Because, again, it was, like you said, it was so up and down. I mean, super active. I mean, he did also score the Wolves a point by drawing a tech on Jackson Hayes as well, too, by, like, pissing him off enough. But he's just, like, lazy finishing. Like, he's doing that little two-handed, like, I'm just going to drop the ball near the rim and hope it falls in. It's like, oh,
dunk,
dude,
the ball, man.
Yeah, just put it in, dude. Put it in, you know? And they got an offensive foul on LeBron where he just elbowed him in the back of the head. Like, yes, it was a response to him getting hit first, but like, you can't do that, man. I mean, like, that's the guy who has the most cameras on him in the entire arena. Like, there's a Hawkeye camera trained on LeBron James 24/7. You're gonna elbow him in the back of the head? Like, come on, man. Like, you can't do that. But at the same time, like you said, he had good moments. He stripped Luka again. He dunked a putback right after that. It was just so many ups and downs. And you know, he had got called an offensive goaltend one time. He had so many notes on him, man. The reason I think it's a how that they should lean away from him is because I feel like there's a lot to do with how Nas and Julius Randle are playing on the defensive end, especially against that 5-man unit that the Lakers are rolling out in the second half. If they continue leaning into Dorian Finney-Smith, then Nas and Julius are proving that they can handle that matchup. I even liked a lot of the TJ minutes in the first half when the Wolves got in foul trouble. I mean, again, I'm not saying play TJ, you know, 20 minutes or anything like that, but he can play 10 to, you know, 12 minutes maybe, because again, he's playing physical, he's getting rebounds, he's a lot more active on perimeter, and he damn sure is not going to two-hand biff a layup like at the rim. Like, he's going to throw that shit in. So yeah, you know, again, I'm a howl leaning away from it. I don't think it will happen, but you know, I'll pass it on.
I'll go foul just out of the way of, I don't think it should be like any less than 25 minutes. Looking at where he was at Sunday, I think he played just over 26 minutes. I just think that's essential, especially against this Laker team right now, where you're going to need to be physical and wear them down. I mean, you can put up a Tony Snell stat line, but if you're physical with this team and you can get Jackson Hayes off the floor and force the Lakers to play small, that's kind of when you can play your trump card of Randall and Nas on the floor together to just, frankly, be better and have better personnel on the floor than the Lakers. I do think there's also going to come a point in time with the Lakers win on Wednesday or it comes back home on Friday. It just feels like there's like a 12-12 Rudy game kind of sitting out there. Whether it be the Lakers throwing their best punch in the first four games in terms of just their energy and their energy levels, and they come out maybe a little bit lackadaisical. It just feels like there's going to be this Rudy game coming up where he has that floor raising type of game. He just is sound in the paint, and he keeps possessions down on the other end of the floor. I don't know. I think that's coming. I think it's going to be either game five or if it happens, game six. It could be a microcosm of his game. Just wear the other team down and turn on the afterburners and grab 12 to 15 rebounds.
Yeah. I put foul because I more interpreted it as the Wolves need to lean away from him further. I think that they've kind of gotten right his minutes pattern, mid-20s minutes, because they need him out there for defense. Like if they fully went away from Rudy and played him like 10 minutes or had Jackson Hayes treatment, I don't think that would be the smart thing to do. But certainly the closing lineups have been incredibly successful with Dante and Nas. And I do think that if they are going to win this series, there's going to be a role for Rudy in the next series or the one after that. Like they're going to need him. Is he the anchor of their playoff defense like he was last year? Probably not. But like this is a good example. Like he generates 9 extra possessions, and that's as big of they end up with 10 extra field goals in the game. And like that's as big of a reason as they won as anything. Like we all do this. We see the terrible offensive possessions and we miss the block he had or the people running out of the lane, not trying not to go at him, or the offensive rebound, like I mentioned when he's drawing a foul that we don't notice that was he was the one that generated the extra possession. So yeah, it's been frustrating. I know Andrew and I just, like you mentioned, just dunked the ball. Like it's been as frustrating, but I'm fine with them starting him. I don't find any issue with, especially Mike has said this all year, as long as you close with the guys you're supposed to, I don't really care who starts. And that's been this series down to a T. They've started Rudy and they've closed with Nas. And I think Finch deserves a lot of credit for this series.
Fit your personnel to what the game is presenting to you. That's why I'm such a big proponent of bringing back Nas and Julius. And if Nikhil walks, Nikhil walks. Like you have a dynamic front court that you can deploy at really any situation. And that's what you can do against any other team in the West that I don't think any other teams have, is you have a Rudy if there's a more set defensive game and it's a more grinded out affair. You have Nas and Julius to play together if it's more like this series where you need to run up and down the floor, hit shots and space things out a little bit. So I'm completely with you. I think he for sure has his, I mean, there's no question that he has his role on this team, but yeah, close with who you need to close with, 100%.
Well, the original question was, if the Wolves want to increase their Q rating, they need to lean away from Rudy minutes. And I think it remains a howl because, yeah, I mean, my man cannot go 1-for-6 again, like in the paint. Like, seriously, bro. Like, you're hurting us with all the Gen Zers are flaming us for these. All right, we got to fight back. So
I don't think it's like that. I don't think there's a single excuse you have if you're Rudy Gobert and you play 20 plus minutes, you don't grab 10 rebounds. Yeah. I don't think there's like what, like 7'3", you reach your hand up and you're over the basket, like grab the ball.
Yeah, Jaden McDaniels got to talk to Rudy Gobert or something about height and being the biggest guy on the floor. Because if Rudy is playing with the same mindset of rebounding the ball that Jaden is, again, I'm not trying to dump on Rudy, even though I kind of am indirectly, is that I think there is so much more meat on the bones, like, to be serious, though, with Rudy Gobert moving forward. And so, you know, you talk about, is there a 12-12 game, like, kind of bubbling there? I mean, if bro finishes two or three of his layups, he'd pretty much be there that last game. So, yeah, I agree.
It's frustrating because you see it.
Yep, I agree. All right, let's head into our last segment here. Two words. Give a two words summary of where to describe the state of the Wolves. Mine is Target Center, just to go back to the amazing crowds, the fun times. It wasn't that long ago, like right before the pandemic, where the Wolves were just like lost in the wilderness. Ryan Saunders was seemingly not a great choice for coach. The Jimmy stuff had kind of was long gone at that point, and it wasn't that long ago where they're just kind of aimless. They end up with the number one pick. They could have taken Wiseman. That would have been brutal. They could have taken LaMelo, talented guy, but certainly far from what Ant's been able to do. So I guess thanks Gerson Rosas for that one. But yeah, Target Center crowds had been absolutely sensational over the weekend. Andrew, what about you?
My two are against themselves because they are really the only people that will prevent them from closing this series out. And we are in very dangerous territory right now with the national media talking about how Anthony Edwards might be better than Luka, how this team will have no problem closing the Lakers out. We're seeing a lot of gentleman sweep stuff. And that is where this team typically tends to read the press clippings and completely take their foot off the gas. So if they want to close things out in five and gentlemen sweep it, they can 100% do it. Just play like you have the last two games. That's all you got to do. Just have three guys show up, wear them down. The Lakers will not have a lot of energy, and just win the game. If you come out and you have Mr. Anthony Edwards throwing 15 shots up in the first, you know, seven-ish minutes of the game, and you don't have ball movement, and you're completely, I guess, in your own heads, and you scroll through your phones a little bit too much, you might find yourself in some trouble, and you're then on your heels heading back to Target Center, where the crowds are great. But again, if you're on your heels, you haven't played super great at home this year. So close it out in LA. You can do it. All you got to do is just not read what people are saying, like Stephen A. Smith.
Yeah, seriously. I saw a post on social media talking about if the Lakers really want to win, they would bench all five of their starters and start all their bench guys because the Timberwolves will not show up against that team. And like, we laugh, but it's because it's true. It's true. I mean, like, that is where the Wolves are the favorites is when they are at their worst. And so again, the favorites heading into finishes in five or six, they need to do it now. This cannot go to seven. And so I do want to also note on Ryan's Target Center as his two words too, is that I've only been to Minnesota, I think, three or four times ever. And one of the times I went was in January of 2013. And I experienced what was called a polar vortex, I think is what you all call it out there. And I was watching Shabazz Muhammad play three home games against the Phoenix Suns and the Utah Jazz and the Phoenix Suns, Jazz, and the Nuggets. Yeah, and it was three losses. They got blown out three games in a row. And I was like, why the hell did I come here to Minnesota? And to see from that like cavernous Target Center to kind of what I'm seeing on TV now, and you know, hopefully we'll be experiencing later this season, I could go again in the playoffs. Like, I love that. My two words, though, similar vein as Andrew, is it's not over. Not over are my two words, because if there's one series I would never count my chickens before they hatch, it's against the NBA's favorite team, the Los Angeles Lakers. I will never count the Wolves as like, okay, yeah, so who do we want? Let's watch this Rockets and Warrior series and see who we're going to match up with. Nope, not yet. Not for me. Like, I go to work every day. I see about 10 to 15 different Lakers fans every day. And they're like, oh, you must be feeling good. I was like, I don't feel shit right now. Okay. Like, not until the series is over. Like, this it might as well be 0-0 to me right now. Same thing. I'll plug that same letter I wrote to the Los Angeles Lakers, where I was literally have like things I need to go to therapy for, because I gloated about the Timberwolves when they almost beat the Lakers in like 2003, and then we ended up losing, and now like some 22 years later, I'm still like unable to digest this. And so, yeah, it is not over. It's not over. It's not over. Those are my two words.
Yeah, and it seemed like the team understood that idea. Both I've watched like their Timberwolves YouTube recap, and Finch in his post game four locker room speech goes like this the fourth win is going to be the hardest one to get. And then Ant, what's funny is Ant goes to the podium and says the same thing and kind of makes it seem like he was the one that came up with that when it was Finch. I found that funny. But he's right. Like, the Lakers are going to give you probably their best punch. I mean, I guess a lesser team would roll over and die in a game five after a tough game four loss for the Lakers. I just don't expect that to happen. They had an opportunity in game two to roll over and die if they wanted to do so. And I think the Wolves can absolutely win game five. The Lakers are going to give them the good punch. But the main thing going for the Wolves, other than obviously their 3-1 lead, is that in the last three games of the series, there's no extra off days. They go from, and they're both travel days. So if the Wolves end up losing game five, 2 days later, they play back home at Target Center. God forbid that this series goes seven. Game seven is 2 days after game six. For a team like the Lakers that is playing so deep, that is one thing. It would be a monumental collapse for the Wolves to lose this. But like you said, it's not over. And those two guys on the Lakers still strike fear. But yeah, the goal is obviously don't let this thing go seven. Ideally, you don't let it get past Wednesday.
Don't even let it go. Don't even let it go six. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. I mean, frankly, like if it went six and you're at Target Center Friday, again, there's no question the crowds have been great, but you still have a couple nerves heading into that one. Like, you just experience a little bit of a punch. You go back to a crowd that's going to get a little angsty if things get out of hand early. Like, there's definitely a little anxiety that goes into that Friday game if you let it go six. So just close it out, man. Just close it out. Wear this team down. They have whether it be older or more out of shape legs or very willing bench legs that aren't going to get played. Close it out.
Yeah, the Wolves, they have to treat this as a must win game. Like, this has to be their attitude. They can't be like, okay, well, you know, whatever, we'll come back and we'll win at home. Like, they cannot do that. I mean, let's get some Bones Highland minutes in there. Let's get some Tristan Newton minutes in there. Let's blow them out by freaking 500 points and, you know, set a new NBA record. So yeah, let's finish this, guys.
Yeah, I agree. Personally, I expect them to do so. I don't expect that this series will be back in LA for game seven, but obviously you never know. And the Wolves, they got to win a game. They got to win one more game, and then we're looking forward to whatever the heck happens from there. Game five, late night, kind of what you'd expect playing out in California, but 9 p.m. Central Time start. Not sure what the pod schedule will be. Not sure. Personally, I want to stay up late and do a live reaction that late. We'll see.
If we win game five, I will be up at 11:30 p.m. my time or whatever time it is. And I will
good for you.
I'll do 5 hours of live by myself if we eliminate the Lakers in game five, okay? Like, I'll go 24 hours.
I'm just saying good for you for the game that starts 7 p.m. your time for staying up. You know, congrats for you.
Man. Hey, you know.
The hero.
I wish I was with y'all.
The hero we deserve.
Yeah, that's for sure.
How cool would it be, though? I mean, the thing is, game five, like, you talk about some of the officiating comparisons from year to year with the Mavericks in this series. How cool would it be if you see a similar game five with just a role reversal of Ant and Luka? You just see Ant come out and end it before Lakers can even come back in. And the third quarter comes around, Luka's crouching down near the free throw line while one of the Lakers is taking shots, and he just starts talking shit right in his ear. Just like it happened last year. Like, how fun would that be? I mean, that's your perfect situation.
Yeah, that'll be great. But until then, I think the Minnesota men's sports anxiety will take over us all until we can push it through.
That it will.
But yeah, for Leo and Andrew, I'm Ryan. Thank you everyone for listening.
Get home, drive safe.
Go Wolves.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.